with screens
live.
Yeah, with screens and all kinds of special effects on stage, so that, you know, the gasp factor in terms of the audience is really very possible. It's more probable in the theater. So to have this thing on the stage is really a first.
And this is going to be multimedia. You have rear projection, you have costumes, you have what are some of the elements that will be
and magic. You know, magic leading, following what David says, is really an important part of the show. I mean, there's just so much kind of magical stuff, transformations and things that go on the stage. So ultimately, I mean, in our upcoming staged event, you know, we're limited in some of the scope of the same things like the magic, but ultimately we see it as being just a, you know, an addition to being great character story and music and so forth. We've got, you know, it's a magic show.
Well, you know, David, this isn't the first time that you've composed for a musical. Prior efforts are Scandalous, and you did a solo show, Chaplin.
Yes.
And, tell us about the sort of sound. I mean, some people might think this is kind of retro what you're doing. It's almost an analog thing with a 6-piece orchestra.
Yeah.
This is not somebody on a digital synthesizer. These are real people playing, you know, classic 20th century instruments.
Yeah, well, kind of it's true. I mean, they're pop instruments. Like I say, they're 21st century instruments in that sense. You know, most great records of today are acoustic. Mm-hmm. You know, acoustic guitars, acoustic drums, you know, real drums, and that's like, you know, the fashion, interestingly and ironically, you know. But with something like this, I'm a fan of melody. I love melody. I'm also a drummer, so I love rhythm. And so with this particular piece, it is contemporary, and yet it's we're trying to write real songs. Real good songs. You know, very melodic things that you love to sing, love to listen to, and there are synthesized effects. I mean, there are digital, you know, effects all throughout.
You know, it might be that people, when they see this, will feel like, it'll almost feel a little bit like a throwback to classic musical comedies, in a sense, simply because I haven't seen, for myself, and I'm a great musical fan. I love the musical. And I haven't seen in recent years that many kinds of shows that really suck me in and make me come out of the theater singing and dancing and so forth.
It's true.
And you know, some of the old musicals, that's, you know, singing and dancing as you exit is what it's all about.
Sure.
And in a sense, I feel like, you know, we're trying to rekindle some of that.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you're right. And you know, the shows of yesteryear, you know, nostalgia aside, it's not about being, oh, those were the golden era of theater, and many people consider it so. I mean, there's a reason for it. Mm-hmm. It's because, like what Will said, there was a concentration that every song, not only does it have to work in the show and be organic to the character, but it might as well just be a great song.
Well, David, you're known for writing classic pop songs that have been recorded by the likes of Bette Midler and Barry Manilow and Mel Brooks, so many of the greats.
Yeah.
And so many of these are one-offs, you know, trying to get that feeling again, things like that.
Sure.
But, you know, when you're going into something that the song has to carry the narrative along, I mean, you must have some great musical people that you called upon, you know, maybe Rodgers and Hart or somebody like that.
Sure. Yeah, well, I have my heroes, you know, compositionally, you know, Leonard Bernstein and the boys and girls.
Sure, West Side Story.
You bet. And that was the thing that got my blood boiling when I was a kid, you know, on theater. But what's interesting, when you're writing a musical, you get someone like Will who envisions something and writes terrific, snappy dialogue and writes a book, writes a script, and descriptions on what kind of song should be there. And we discuss, you know, what should the song say and how far should it go and all this sort of thing. And then I have at it. So it's the book for a songwriter and in the theater, the book is the foundation. And when it's a good book, the songs turn out well.
You know, David is really well known, as everybody knows, for these just wonderful melodies, wonderful ballads and love songs and a variety of kinds of things like that. Not so far, and that's what I want to point out, not that well known as a comedy writer, as a musical comedy kind of person. And I actually think that I'm ecstatic about some of the songs because the lyrics are to die for. They're so, and I die laughing. I'm crying half the time, you know, when I'm through just listening in the rehearsals to some of these songs. I mean, they're absolutely brilliant. Not just musically, but lyrically as well. I mean, just funny, funny stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's hear a clip from one of the songs in The Kiss. I believe this song is sung by the Prince before he's turned into a frog. Here's a little song from The Kiss by Will Vinton and David Pomeranz.
Trusty steed, time for us to take the lead. What a glorious day it is for high adventure. The wind blowing through my hair, crowds are cheering everywhere. That's the way it's got to be when you're alive and young and me. So much to do, so little time, wars to win and hills to climb, on the never-ending search for high adventure. And while I'm in the neighborhood, I'll fix the dragon's wagon. Good, kill the monster, down he splats. Make his gizzard into lizard hats for the throngs of eager misses who will shower me with kisses when I greet them.
What did we just hear? This is
what
great.
What was
this
that
is,
anyway?
David, that was a pre being turned into the frog Prince song. So yeah, he sounds like he's got lots of hubris.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Yeah, there you go.
That's picked
right.
up on that.
Yeah, he's full of himself and he's got the whole world ahead of him and he's hot stuff, you know, and which we kind of temper him as the show goes on.
This is the story of two very, very egocentric, narcissistic prince and princess who could not stand each other, can't be in the same room with each other, you know, since they grew up because they're neighboring kingdoms. Because they fill the room, both of them, so much that there's no space left over for the other
point,
one.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the fun thing because the we do keep the Frog Prince motif of him having to get a kiss to become normal again, right? From a princess. Well, there's no princesses around for 2,000 miles or more, except for this one who cannot be in the same room as he, and so somehow he has to seduce.
Let alone kiss.
has to seduce the kiss out of a woman who would never kiss him, even as a human, you know, sort of. So that's kind of the extra sort of challenge. And, you know, that's why it becomes a kind of a battle of the sexes, because he has to go in there and work and fight. And, of course, you know, in time, there's some changes that happen. And that's the story.
Well, this story, I mean, the way that you're doing this, it hits all these sort of allegorical, mythopoetic notes here because, you know, I mean, we're all, when we get far enough through life, we've all had moments when we're on the top, and then a few months later, we can't get our calls returned. and so, you know, I'm sure as guys who have had your ups and downs over the years, you know, been hot, been not, you must have brought some of your own experience into the writing of this musical.
Gosh, always. Yeah. Always. It's got to be real. You know, even if it's a character, a made-up character, fantasy character, cartoon character, the writer has to find something in himself of reality to make it play. Otherwise, it's going to be glib and it might as well be a Saturday morning cartoon.
And you want it to be relatable.
Absolutely.
Universally.
Absolutely. And the characters have to learn stuff, you know, like we do. You know?
Well, we're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm SW Conser. I'm sitting in today for D. May Roberts. My guests are claymation inventor Will Vinton and composer musician David Pomeranz. And David, that was your voice on the demo that we heard in the last clip.
Right.
We want to let people know that these two, Will and David, are about to open a new musical called The Kiss for two shows only, March 24th and 25th. At 7:30 p.m. at Lakewood Center for the Arts. It's located at 368 South State Street in Lake Oswego. For more info, visit thekissmusical.com. And you can get all that info as well as photos and links at stageandstudio.org. I want to hear another piece from the show. And this one, I don't think you're singing this one, David, because it's from The Princess. So so let's hear one more piece from The Kiss.
I want to go sing. My love's hand, oh, wouldn't it be grand?
That's a beautiful piano. Give us the backstory on that song. David, what's happening in the scene during it?
Well, let's see, she is longing for the perfect man. And for her life, and he as one of his ploys to get him to kiss her, to get her to kiss him, is hiding in the bushes behind her, and sort of in Cyrano fashion, is being fed things to say, romantic things to say to her, to try to get her attention.
You're doing sort of a mashup of classic drama themes here.
That's true, isn't it? That's true. Universal.
Well, so you. You're only doing the two shows here in town. You're workshopping. It sounds like you're looking for some audience reaction while you're here.
Absolutely.
And then, do you want to immediately take this outside of Portland and take it on the road?
Well, you know, we not sure, but I think we anticipate probably doing a full pre-Broadway premiere somewhere in the Northwest. Like to do it here in Portland, maybe in Seattle. That's an option as well. That's probably a year or more off, realistically, because that's kind of the time frame of these things. This particular thing is a lot of fun because it's like, very much a work in progress, but it's got a lot of stuff going for it, a lot of things, sort of that we're throwing into the pot. And the very first time that we're going to be showing it to an audience as well. So that's the kind of the really, really fun part. And I think it'll be fun for people. I hope people come and join us because it'll be fun, I think, to sort of see, sort of this thing, the progress of this thing as it evolves and so on.
Well, I want to ask you, Will, you are one of the big names in stop motion animation. In your case, claymation was your field. You did a lot of work in clay. You did some Mark Twain films. You did the California Raisins, famous for that. And how is your work in animation and puppetry kind of informed how you're doing the visual aspects for the musical here?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there's no question that I kind of see somewhat cinematically in cuts and things, and I've put in a lot of scenes, a lot of into this stage play because of that. I'm almost intercutting scenes from one to another. In some cases, they're happening simultaneously.
Are you doing blackouts on either side of the
exactly,
stage? That sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. That kind of thing. But it's. I have to say that I have to go back regarding that question. I have to go back to say that when I was a kid, I was probably more enthused by musical comedy and musical theater as a teenager than I was filmmaking, because my parents were into theater, and so in some ways I feel like I cut my teeth, at least my comedic teeth on stage musicals, and applied that to animation in some ways.
Really? I know that some of your features, such as The Adventures of Mark Twain, had a lot of musical numbers in them.
I tried to put music in every single project I think we ever did. Some of them very successfully, that were very much became musicals, sort of.
So who inspired you? I know that that David was inspired by, the West Side Story, certainly. What were some of your influences?
Well, I think... as I say, the theater sort of inspired me. But I also, I mean, people actually, comics, some of the classic old comics who are really old, even when I was a kid. I mean, the Sid Caesars of the world and the Jack Bennies of the world and so on. You know, I just loved their silly, wonderful comedy. You know, it was really smart, though. Silly, but smart. It was
smart,
really
well written.
Really cool stuff. And I think that's been a little bit of what I feel like I've kind of done, even in Claymation when we were, you know, dealing with comedy. So in a sense, going to the theater now has been almost like stepping back and doing something that I feel somehow familiar with, except I'm heavily informed by all of this animation, you know, years of sort of trying to do what, you know, keeping things really moving fast and having lots of quick dialogue and quick, you know, ins and outs and you know, having people relate to music in really key ways and so forth. So, you know, it's kind of a hodgepodge that's hard to sort of separate and figure out.
Well, it's interesting. In terms of artists, I have a lot of friends, Will and I were talking about this the other day, who are artists known for a particular genre. But when you look into their lives, you also find that they're painters. You also find that they're sculptors and they are designers and they love music and so they do lots and lots of things and have lots of heroes and lots of aspiration in many areas. And you put all of that together and it becomes a synthesis of something that you use and try to express. So it's a function a lot of who we listened to, who we watched, who we loved, and what we wanted to be like.
Well, speaking of which, you've got couple of other elements in the musical that's very local. You've got choreography and dance by Bodyvox founders and artistic directors Jamie Hampton and Ashley Rowland.
Right.
What's their contribution to the effort?
Well, I mean, at this stage, it's not a huge contribution, but it's really kind of an important one. We're experimenting, you know, and bringing elements into the show in various ways.
Is there a bit of improv going on then?
Pardon?
A little bit of improv, maybe?
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah, definitely some. But in terms of the choreography, you know, ultimately, you know, the whole thing will be deeply choreographed. Mm-hmm. But right now, we're kind of just playing with things, you know, experimenting with things. And Jamie and Ashley, I've always just loved their work. You know, they just do fantastic work, and they're very well known around here and around the nation as having wonderfully sort of quirky, you know, material. Really, really polished, capable of doing any kind of, you know, really seemingly modern dance form, but then turning it on its ear. And I love that about them. And so that's what we want to try and get from them in this show as well. So it's really, really been fun.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're working on is something that works on several levels with The Kiss, that you're definitely trying to bring in kids, but you've also got sophisticated content and humor for the grown-ups, something along the lines of The Lion King or maybe, you know, one of my favorite shows, Bullwinkle and Rocky.
There you go.
Played to a bunch of different age groups.
Right, exactly. I think what sets us apart is that all the actors are naked.
So that
brings in.
That works on all levels. Sure.
All levels, contemporary and everything.
Yeah, no, I almost put it the other way around. I think that this show is really kind of it's kind of an adult show that's okay for kids.
Okay.
That's good for kids. I almost put it
Quite.
In that category.
Absolutely.
Now I'm wondering if you're planning to maybe if you got any plans to maybe bring this full circle and do an animated version in the future, adaptation.
Well, we might now that you know we have new songs and we have a whole new you know range of things. But I think, you know, we're really committed to seeing what this can do on the stage and what we can sort of bring to the stage that's different and new and kind of fresh. And so, you know, if we can get through that process and, you know, and people like the show as much as I think they will, then, you know, that's possible down the road. Yeah.
So, Will, you're doing other projects as well in addition mm-hmm. to the play. You've got a company called Free Will Entertainment.
Actually, that's one of the names. We also called Mitten Entertainment. Yeah, we sort of have different names. Free Will was the name that I came when I sold the company, and the company then changed the name to Laika and so on. So for a while, I liked the name. I liked the multiple meaning of free will entertainment a lot.
And but, so many animators work for free nowadays anyway, or close
right,
to
that's
it.
That's right.
They shouldn't, of course. But I've seen, you know, that on some of the animation blogs and such, that you've got a lot of irons in the fire. There's some projects you're working on the financing for. The Quest was one that I saw.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we're also working with a company in Korea, Seoul, Korea, on a project that I really like that we've developed for them, with them to some extent. And great team of people over there. Interestingly, a team that cut their teeth on all of our old films. So they trained
incredible.
All of their animators with basically our old short films. So they have a style that's reminiscent of...
Oh, so they project your stuff as inspiration.
Yeah,
for
so it's
animators.
Really funny because, you know, we go to this completely thing. It's like out of time and place, you know, because it's sort of like it's still doing claymation or something.
That's fascinating.
Years later.
Wow. Well, let's talk about The Kiss again. It's a musical, book and lyrics by Will Vinton and David Pomerantz. It's March 24th and 25th at 7:30 p.m. at Lakewood Center for the Arts. That's located at 368 South State Street in Lake Oswego. And for more info, you can check out thekissmusical.com, thekissmusical.com. David, how about yourself? What are some of the other projects that you've got rolling around in your head that you'd get out there?
Oh, rolling around in my head? Oh, my gosh. This is only a half an hour show, right? Okay. Well, you know, I'm about to do another musical working. I'm going to be cryptic intentionally, but outside of the U.S. with funding from elsewhere, and it's an international story for which I'll write music and lyrics, and I'm very excited about that, and that's going to be over the next year. And I still tour and make records, so I go on tour and keep that rolling as well at the same time. So I've kind of two careers going at once.
It's these are guys who never slow down. Well, certainly we'll look forward to seeing this project that you've been working on, not for 20 years, but certainly on and off over the past 20 years. The Kiss, the new musical at the Lakewood Center for the Arts. Will Vinton and David Pomerantz, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
On Stage
my pleasure.
Studio. Yeah, that's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. We'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. Also, like us on facebook.com/StageNStudio or tweet DMay at StageNStudio. Till next time, I'm SW Conser filling in for DMay, and we're going to go out with more by David Pomerantz from the new musical The Kiss.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is Art Focus with host Joseph Galaban. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University's 5 part-time MBA programs, each designed to provide an educational experience and a transformational journey for those who want to move business forward to change the world around them. Enrolling now for spring term, details at merrillhurst.edu.
This is Joseph Galavan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Heather Watkins. She's an artist with a show currently on at the Art Gym at Merrill Hurst University near Lake Oswego. The show is called Recurrent Work, and it runs through April the 2nd. Welcome to KBOO, Heather.
Thank you, Joseph.
You're pretty well known around Portland. You have public work at the Lincoln Hall, PSU. People might know that's a fairly new piece. And you're also represented by PDX Gallery in the Pearl, Jane Beebe's Gallery. So people might be familiar with your style and your interests already. But this show is quite a big one, and it's beautifully installed at the Art Gym. It's very striking. So let's just take people through as they walk in. They've arranged the walls down the middle in a sort of, it's like you're in a toaster, you know, there's like lines. And as you come in, there's a huge piece called Medium, which looks to the outsider like black rope, coiled and tangled and stuck to the wall, kind of sticking out. So just tell us a bit about Medium.
Thank you. Medium is made of cotton cord that's been soaked in India ink. The amount of cord in that particular piece is probably about 100 feet, maybe a little bit more. And as I, after soaking it, I lay it out on long rolls of mulberry paper to dry. And as the soaked cord dries, I move it around to shape the cord, and in the process, create a drawing on the mulberry paper. And secondary to that, I lay another sheet of thinner mulberry paper over top of it and press down on that. So there are two drawings that are made at the same time that the sculptural material is being formed. And then after it's dried, I attach it to the wall, and I do this on site for each specific location. So the process that I use for the piece at the Art Gym is the same process that I used for the larger piece that you mentioned at Portland State University in Lincoln Hall. At the Art Gym, it's a more immediate installation. It's not meant to be a permanent installation. So I just use nails drilled into the wall, and I spend a day or two, or as long as I have, arranging the cord. The cord is semi-rigid. The ink-dried process creates kind of a semi-rigid casing around the cord, and that will allow the twists and arcs to hold, and I can get a lot of dimensionality coming off the wall.
And what is this cord?
It's cotton piping cord or welting cord. It's used for upholstery. The size that I'm using in the piece we're discussing is about an inch thick, so it would be a very large piping.
For piping, it looks like rope, but smooth.
Yes. And it's all cotton. So there's a cotton. It's not twisted like a rope. It's not twined in that way. It's if you take it apart, it looks like cotton batting with a little bit of a cotton netting that holds it together.
So you get like a paddling pool full of India ink in this case?
Yes. Yeah. For the larger work, I use a kiddie pool, my son's kiddie pool, and just pour gallons of India ink in there.
So this piece, the cord is dried out, and you stand there when it's dry and loop it around nails, and you create a sculpture, basically, which works into the corner of the gallery, sort of sticks out maybe a foot. Mm-hmm. And it's characterized by tangles and sort of twists and loops back and forth. Mm-hmm. And the whole process is you letting the material follow its own nature, is that correct?
Yes, my interest in this material and in some of the other materials I work with, I work with a lot of fibers, including thread and sometimes yarn and twine. And in this case, I'm really interested in what this material does given the circumstances that I'm creating for it. So before I soak it, it's a very soft material, and I am interested in the way that it naturally coils. I mean, it comes off of a spool. So there are other works in the exhibition that are the same material that's been soaked and then coiled in that natural way. But as do many fibers, this really has a tendency to tangle and twist and turn. And so I try to work with that energy, the sort of dynamic energy that line that has.
Mm-hmm. Do you look at it now and you follow it like a line, like somebody drew it?
Well, that's a good question. I think while I'm making the work, there's so much of it. I mean, I tend to take a quantity that will, in a way, defy your ability to follow it completely. And I think that's unconsciously one of the things that I'm doing. I would do something different in the arrangement of it if I wanted you to be able to follow the line completely all the way through. There's quite a lot of material there.
Mm-hmm. There are pictures of it on kboo.fm under Art Focus. It's worth taking a look because it's quite hard to describe. But the gallery, a lot of the walls are taken up with prints, or you call them drawings, right? They're the cord sort of pressed onto white paper, usually white paper. And there's a whole series of them, transmission state. How did they come about?
The transmission states preceded the larger medium wall sculptures, and they are a series of drawings that numbers 35. They're made on Kozo paper, which is a thin Japanese paper. I like it for its